Welcome back to Dare to Develop. Today, we're so excited to have Jessica Lauren and Kat Brayman, who have merged their individual photography businesses to be Lauren and Brayman, and also have started a new community called Read.
So today we're talking with them all about balance and harmony and how basically there is no such thing as that. So we are really going to dive into them on their ideas and how you can have a more harmonious life.
Yes. So stay tuned for business and life tips.
You're listening to Dare to Develop, a podcast for creatives. I'm Christine Herman.
And I'm Ashley Baumgartner, and we are two hybrid wedding photographers that dub ourselves work wives.
With a passion for developing community and daring to take risks in business and art, we want to bring you along on a journey.
The journey of artists, makers, business professionals, and more who want to level up their businesses by daring greatly and developing community.
So let's get started.
Welcome back to Dare to Develop. Today, we're so excited to have Jessica Lauren and Kat Brayman join us. They co-founded Lauren and Brayman as well as Read, which we're going to talk all about.
We can't wait to hear from you two all about daring to realize that balance is bullshit. Thanks so much for being here with us, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so good to be here.
So before we get started on our main topic, we'd love to hear a little bit about each of you individually.
Yeah, I'll go first. I'm Jessica, and I'm a wedding photographer, co-founder of Lauren and Brayman, and co-founder of Read. Also, I have two small children, and I live in Florida.
Awesome. How about you, Kat?
I started my business in 2009, have been full-time since 2010. I have two teenagers now, which is crazy to think about. And I guess there's a husband there somewhere, too. And in my free time, I like to dig in the dirt. I have a large garden, and I'm a little bit plant obsessed.
Yes. And we know you're also building a house.
Yes, we're building a house in the Bahamas.
Amazing. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey into the wedding world? We two are definitely veterans when it comes to the wedding. So how did you two kind of start into this business?
I was the director of marketing for a large travel agency, and I had the opportunity to go on a FAM to Alaska on a small ship cruise. And so I was like, well, I need a camera. So I bought the original Rebel and proceeded to take really terrible landscape photos all over and then photoshopped them to death and felt so good about them that I even sent out CDs to everybody else on the trip.
I love it.
Embarrassing. And then my first son was born and I somehow stumbled on Flickr, and I spent the first 3 years of my oldest son's life taking a photo of him every single day. Some was candid, some was like full on staged photo shoots. And that's how I taught myself photography.
Yes, you had to do the Flickr 365 projects. I mean, come on.
You know, and then as naturally happened, people started asking you to take photos of their family and their kids. And one thing led to another. And I became a wedding photographer.
How about you, Jess?
I feel like my story follows the same storyline as most people that got started in the early 2000s. But I spent a lot of like my young adult years being terrified and intimidated by like professional photography, because I always loved taking pictures, but I'm just not like a technical person. And that really, really scared me. But my husband could see that. I mean, even before he was my husband, could see that it was something I was really interested in and passionate about. So he kept buying me cameras like for college graduation or my birthday or Christmas or whatever. And he would always buy like the latest, you know, Rebel or whatever it was. And one year he showed up with this 40D, you know, the Canon. And I was like, this, you've gone too far. This is too expensive. This is a waste of money. You've got to stop, you know. And he was like, well, all you have to do is charge people when they ask you to take their pictures and it won't be an issue. And I was like, huh, yeah. And so everybody that asked me to take pictures of their family that year with my fancy camera, I charged them. And, you know, then somebody wanted me to do their wedding and the rest is history. So that was, you know, 2008. And so my first wedding was April 2009. And here we are.
love that the husband gently guided you to your passion.
I know, but he takes a little too much credit for it now, though. I'm like, wait.
Would not be who she is today without me.
He loves that line.
I love that. And so how did you two meet or cross paths in the wedding industry then?
So we both attended a local photography meetup for a group called So Fly.
Don't even say the name.
We're so clever. That's why I want you to edit that out.
I think that's gold.
The group did not work out in any way, shape, or form, but Jess and I became like instant friends and have been friends, support systems, second shooters, travel buddies ever since.
Sounds familiar.
Yes.
It was yours name, SoFly, too.
Ours didn't have a name.
Ours
was just a small group meetup, but consistently dwindled until just us. Yeah.
I do feel like I need to explain that it was a South Florida-based group. So South Florida, SoFly became SoFly.
That's okay.
SoFly arbitrarily.
Like, we're so fly. We're so cool. Yeah.
Early obviously, that was it. That was that, too.
I love that. And so then how did you two decide to ultimately merge your photography businesses?
That came a lot later. And we had talked about it at several points throughout the years, but there was always, you know, things that we couldn't figure out, like, you know, volume and how to price it and things like that. And just seasons of life. You know, I had my kids so much later than Kat had hers. And, you know, so it just wasn't, the timing wasn't right. I guess it was 2022. Yeah. I was just kind of like, I felt like I was really at this standstill of like, how is this going to keep going? Do I feel like I have anything left in me? You know, I feel like I'm just so pulled in different directions. And, you know, Kat had a lot of other things going on. And so it's just kind of like, I didn't see a lot of sustainability moving forward because of, as you guys know, it's just the juggle is so difficult. And I just kind of felt like after doing it for so long, I was running out of steam and realizing that we were actually duplicating a lot of effort. You know, we were working in the same markets, the same type of client, a lot of times in the same network, you know, of planners and referrals. And we would always share weddings. We would always share referrals. And it was, it kind of seemed like it made more sense from an efficiency standpoint to merge. But from a creative standpoint, our styles have always been really complementary, even though they're different. And we felt like being able to offer that story, you know, to a client for their wedding day, being able to have, you know, the more romantic editorial alongside the more like authentic documentary is something that we could bring collaboratively that we couldn't necessarily independently. Plus, it allowed us to really lean on each other in terms of just the workload, which would provide the sustainability that we both really needed.
And even business-wise, we have very complementary strengths. So the things that she enjoys doing on the like business end of things and is good at are different than the ones that I'm good at. So being able to kind of divide up that work made it more sustainable and also just more fun because we do a lot of destination weddings and we enjoy traveling together and we like working together. And I think after 13 years, we have found like a rhythm on a wedding day where we kind of can communicate without even talking. I'm sure you guys know what we're talking about.
Right. Definitely. I think it's interesting with like what we're going into today about balance of how you two are feeling overwhelmed with everything. But kind of like what you two are talking about with what we're saying today about balance is realizing that if you were going with the way you're going with your work, you were going to burn out. So kind of like moving into what we're talking about today with Reed, can you talk about how you started this collective?
Like I said, we've both been doing this a very long time and Kat, you know, her kids are a little bit older, but after I had my second child, I was living in New York City at the time. We didn't have any family around and I had moved my business and tried to, you know, establish community up there. And then when I had my son, it was just, it was very isolating. And he had a lot of health challenges. And I was flying back and forth to Florida, you know, to take care of the weddings that I had booked. And I just was at this point where we finally moved home. So back to Florida. And I was just so burnt out. And I was really struggling with juggling, you know, being the kind of parent that I wanted to be, but also was being demanded to be because of his challenges and maintaining this business at the level that I wanted to service my clients and the level that I wanted to create. And it just felt like I was at an impasse, you know, and I realized that there wasn't a lot of support out there. I didn't have anybody that could say like, yes, I've been there and it is so hard and here's what helped me. And this is, you know, the pathway or the roadmap, you know, to being successful and sustaining this juggle. And obviously I was sharing all those things with Kat, but her situation wasn't the same as mine at that time. And the more I kind of kicked the tires on it, the more I realized that a lot of people leave this industry when things get hard, you know, when they have kids or they become caretakers for their parents or whatever life throws at them. There's not a huge group of us that have stuck it out, you know, and I think there's a reason for that. And so I realized that there was really a need in our community to establish a space where people can have tools and resources to create that sustainability that hasn't been there before, but also just to support one another and to be real and to be vulnerable about how difficult it is, because it is unique, I think, to what we do, that we're business owners, but we're also creatives, but we also can't, most of us can't put our lives on hold to pursue those things, you know? And so to me, it became like, creativity became this like privilege that I didn't have access to because of the season of life I was in, you know? And so I just started thinking like, wouldn't it be cool if there was a community that emphasize mental wellness and emphasize creative sustainability for people that are in similar seasons, you know? And of course, there's not that I know of. So we kind of talked and dreamed about Reed, and we even came up with this name. And then the pandemic happened and it became lost in the shuffle. Like, I honestly completely forgot about it.
Kat's like, remember this idea we had?
I was like, wouldn't it be cool? Yeah, that would be amazing. And we did. I mean, we worked with a designer. We came up with a logo. But then nobody expected, you know, 2020 to happen. And it did. And so fast forward to, you know, late last year, Kat and I were thinking, like, what's one additional, you know, revenue stream we could add to Lauren and Brayman? Because, you know, we're changing up how we approach booking weddings a little bit. So what's something we can do to kind of scaffold that income? And so we thought, like, you know, maybe educational offerings. A lot of people have done that. You know, we've both dabbled in it, but it hasn't been, you know, a primary source of revenue. So we were kind of thinking about that. So we hired a coach to sort of help us brainstorm like what we could offer, you know, within the industry. And she has this long excavation process that she does. And through that, basically, it became really clear to us that the biggest desire on both of our hearts was to offer something exactly like what Reed was. After a day of, you know, brainstorming and distilling down. And so it was funny because when we got to the place in the conversation where we were like, well, what would we call it? I was like, yeah, we should call it Reed. Because it was like a throwback, you know? And then we started kind of thinking about the meaning of Reed, which if you look up, like, what does a plant mean? A reed means hope, healing, and harmony. And my sister actually reminded us that if you think of like, I mean, we have a religious background. If you think of a reed in the Bible, it was a walking stick when you were too tired to go on, you know? And so I kind of love that illustration as well, because that's really what we're trying to do. And as we were thinking of names and words, you know, if you look at the acronym for Reed, we kind of thought that it would be neat if it could stand for like reclaiming, evoking, embracing, and developing like the artist within you, you know, because she's there in all of us. It's just life, you know, like Kristen said, life loves to life. And I
And I think especially as women, there's this like underlying guilt and shame that maybe we're not even consciously aware of when we put ourselves first and when we put our creativity first. So we're always putting that part of like, you know, we're working in the business, we're taking care of our clients, we're taking care of our families, we're doing all of the roles that we're expected to fulfill. And then we're putting that creative artist part of ourselves last. And because that other stuff never goes away, it's never done, it's never complete, the artist just goes by the wayside. And over time, that leads to creative burnout.
Totally.
And I think that ultimately, a lot of times, is what leads women in particular to leave our industry or any creative industry, is because they just have lost the ability to access that part of themselves.
Have you two, since kind of building this, the community, found that you've been able to put the artist more in front of with yourselves?
I noticed that I am being a lot more intentional to do that, but also, and this is just, you know, my wiring, like giving myself permission to do that, you know, and I feel like it's funny to say, like, I'm not an expert at that, but I know what I need to do. And I feel like spending so much time on this is reminding me of the importance of it and kind of holding me accountable to do those things that I know I need to do so that I can be the best artist or the best mom or the best wife or whatever. And realizing, you know, the dangers of continuing to back burner that, you know.
Yeah, I love what you said earlier, Jess, and I don't remember the exact quote, but like, it felt like in that season of life, creativity was like a luxury or a privilege you didn't have access to because of just having young kids and their needs. And like, I have a very active 2-year-old who I definitely feel my day, certain days are very much like that. And I'm like, how the heck am I going to keep doing this for, you know, a decade? And I do remind myself, and Christine reminds me, it's a season of life. It's not going to be like this forever. They'll be in school eventually, and, you know, things like that. But I definitely, that really resonated with me of like the creativity feels like a little tiny spark that's, you know, kind of under a bowl over here. And we have to make sure we make time to let it out.
Well, and if you, I mean, I've done a lot of work and learning about the nervous system. And when you're in that fight or flight, which, I mean, some people are when they're parenting, especially toddlers, your body and your brain is not prioritizing creativity. It's literally trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And if you're in that survival mode for so long, serotonin kind of becomes like a thing of the past.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be so intentional to find those little glimmers of rejuvenation and to whatever it is for you, if it's just getting out in the sunlight or moving your body or whatever those non-negotiables are, to remind you and to remind your nervous system that like, oh, I'm safe to create, because it's so hard in this season to do those things.
Yeah. I feel like we've all felt that too on like a wedding day where the timeline gets behind by no cause of our own. And then you're just in fight or flight, like get through the shot list, get through the expected, and you don't have that room to have creativity. I mean, I just shot one of my best friend's weddings and the same thing happened. It got an hour behind and I spent the whole next day beating myself up of like, hey, I could have been so much more creative. I could have done this. I could have done that. But you really do go into fight or flight. And so it's just a great reminder that we have to do things to actively combat that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
And I think the other piece of it is redefining how we view success in different seasons of life. Because if you're a single woman operating a business, your life looks very different than someone with a toddler. And if you're a single mom with a toddler, I mean, I don't know. Not like all the respect and all the admiration that I have for single parents. And so I think me personally, I'm a 3. So I'm always like trying to be the best at everything. And I think sometimes that comes at the expense of my mental health. It comes at the expense of my creativity. And it comes at the expense of giving my family my, you know, the best of me. So I think just being really self-aware and listening to your gut, listening to your heart, listening to your mind, and just really being in tune with yourself really helps you understand what you need in that moment.
Definitely. And we kind of brought up a little bit about balance within work. How do you two, like, one, define balance and then move that into like working on like a wedding day or just work in general?
Well, I mean, as the title of the episode says, we think balance is complete bullshit, to be perfectly honest with you, because I think we're, again, especially as women, I think we have this, like, we've been fed this like view by the media, you know, Instagram, all the things, where if you just set up your day and your life the right way,
by the right planner.
Planner, exactly. If you have breakfast at this time and then you have scheduled time with your family and scheduled time with your children, and then you schedule in time for clients, like all of those things, if you just line those things up the right way, that somehow you're going to magically have this balanced life. And that's just not the reality of it. I mean, if you really think about what balance, truly being in balance, is, you really would have to be in a completely isolated environment with no external factors, which is not like a wind tunnel, you know, like space, I don't know, a vacuum. Yeah. And that's just not the reality of life. So when we put that kind of pressure on ourselves, it just adds more stress and makes it that much harder to, I think the word we prefer is harmony, that because I think harmony implies safety, that you feel safe and secure. And the other end of it is, really, why do we want to be balanced? Because if you're thinking about it, if you're balanced, you're not moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. There's no forward momentum. There's no growth. So why would we want to be in this space where we're perfectly balanced, but there's no growth? Nothing is happening. There's no forward movement. So I think it's really not about that. I think it's just allowing yourself to be fully present in each and every single moment.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely had to, for myself, reorient the term balance of like, maybe it's balanced over a year, but like quarter one is really focused on X, quarter two is really focused on Y. Like, I was traveling a lot for weddings and conferences March, April, and I felt really bad because I spent very little time with my husband and my two-year-old. But then my husband's a teacher, so like, I know he has the summer off and we're going to get all this time together this summer and we'll have family time and all of that. And so just realizing like, it might not be a day-to-day balance or even a weekly balance, but like it will, I'll find my balance as the year goes on. It just doesn't look like the perfect Instagram day with the planner and the meal prep and the, you know, weekly toddler gymnastics time that we try to make it to. We don't always make it to, and things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think really, if you think about it, balance, the desire for balance is ultimately about a really deep need for control. Right. Mm-hmm. And as we know, control is an illusion. There's very little actually that we can control. And so, and a lot of times the things that make us feel out of balance and make us feel stressed out are things that ultimately are outside of our control. And so when we try to balance those things, it never works. So I think letting some of that control go and maybe allowing just a little bit of chaos to happen is really where the magic is.
Yeah. And I think kind of what you said earlier, Kat, about that plateau, if your life or like your work is in balance, then you aren't really pushing yourself to the next level. So how do you do that? Which is a little bit of chaos and not being in control and really pushing yourself out of the comfort zone, which could be balance.
Yeah. I used to ski race. And so I know, I can tell you for a fact that the races where I felt the most in control going down the mountain are not the races where that I won or the races where I was fast.
Mm-hmm.
I was too safe. I was operating in my comfort zone. And, you know, you don't grow and you're not fast and you're not proactive in your comfort zone.
But I there's something to be said for your comfort zone. Like, you know, I think that there are seasons where it's best to stay in your comfort zone, and you don't always have to be pushing yourself towards growth or pushing yourself towards achievement. I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said for just the sensation of like floating, you know, and going with the flow. And to me, like, that's when I think about harmony, you know, which is more of what I would want to be intentional to pursue versus balance. I imagine myself floating in a current, you know, and not trying to go against it. And yes, like, it's a little bit of chaos because you're moving and you don't really have control over where you're going, but it's kind of like you're comfortable just going with it, mm-hmm. and not having to be the one controlling it. And so I think, you know, especially when you have young kids, it's okay to not be in a hustle season. It's okay to let your hard work from your prior hustle seasons be the momentum. And, you know, one thing that I've really struggled with pertaining to that is not comparing my performance in this season of, you know, self-care and nurturing and whatever I want to call it to my performance when I was in that hustle season before I had kids, you know. And like Kat said, redefining success, because success now to me looks like harmony. Success then looked like growth. And that doesn't mean you can't grow when you're in a homeostasis, you know, but it means that that's not necessarily your main objectives.
Ashley here, popping in for a quick announcement. If you have been debating trying to learn about film photography or just wanting to dip your toes into the film photography world, my girl Christine here has a mini course available for purchase on her website called Fundamentals of Film. Some of you may have gotten it when there's been the Bell Lumiere Creative Collabs as well, but it's a great comprehensive overview of what you need to know to get started with film. Christine's actually who taught me film on a one-on-one mentorship, which she also still offers. But if you just want to dip that toe, head over to her website, christineherman.com, click on education and check out Fundamentals of Film, a mini course.
I love that. Yeah, just even like what success looks like in terms of how much I get done in a day has wildly changed with a toddler in my house and the days he's there all day and all that jazz. But so having been in the industry for a bit of time, you know, we went through this season where it was all about hustle, 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 hustle. Here's how you hustle. Here are the things you need to hustle. You're not doing enough. To then the switch got flipped to self-care, 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 get weekly massages, treat yourself, you know, all of that. Is there a right or a wrong answer? Like what's, and you, I feel like you started to talk about this with your last answer, but like, and you might have different opinions on this, but what, you know, is there a right or wrong answer to either of them?
Wait, though, was there a season of massages and constant health self? Because I missed that season. That one didn't come down on my Netflix. I skipped it.
Well, I just feel like at least maybe it's in California. I don't know, but
the industry. For like the TikTok world of life.
Manifest.
Let it happen. Like, don't go too hard.
So, like, treat your, you know, like, dress for the job you want. Like, take, you know, have the schedule you want in the future. Like, live the life like your clients live.
I know what you're saying, and I unsubscribe. Like,
so, like, that's why we haven't seen it. We don't want to see it.
I honestly, I'm very tightly curated feed. And to me, if that's the life that you get to live, like, that's awesome for you. I love that for you. But that's nothing near what my reality is. And so I've had to kind of be creative to like craft a lifestyle that, you know, allows me to access like rejuvenation where I can find it, you know, and that might just be a walk on the beach or a trip to a thrift store. But, you know, for me, it's restorative and it can help me kind of remember like, oh, I am a person too. Like, you know, or I'm an artist or I have something to offer to the world from like how I see things or whatever that is and however you can access it, I think falls under the self-care umbrella. But for some people, if that's massages and yoga and manifesting, then great. That if that's what they need and that's what they can do, I think that's awesome. But I don't think it has to be that.
Yeah, like For me, it's gardening. And, you know, of course, I bring my three self to the garden, too. I'm in a gardening competition with the 80-year-old man across the street. He clearly has way more time to devote to his garden than I do. But, you know, we're doing our best. But I know that the days.
Are we talking flowers or vegetables or?
Both.
Both. Love it.
Both. Yes, both. But I know that on the days where I get to put my hand in the soil and spend time in my garden alone are, to me, that's a massage, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like a massage for like my brain and for my soul. And so that is what restores and rejuvenates me. And so I think it's really important that everyone finds something, whatever that is for themselves, and gives themselves permission to spend time doing that thing, even if the messaging that we've been told is that it's selfish. Because ultimately it's not. You can't take care of other people. You can't take care of your clients. You can't take care of your family if you first don't take care of yourself. You're never going to give your best to other people if you're not giving yourself your best first. So even if it feels selfish, it really ultimately is very selfless to take care of yourself so that you can give everybody else around you your best.
Yeah, I love that. And I think it's so interesting that just like the self-care or thinking it's selfish for us to take care of ourselves is such a society norm for women to be like, I need to give all these things, but really I need to give myself everything, like you said, to be able to spread the seed to everyone else and to give my 100%. But where do you think, or how would somebody find like what works best for them personally with all aspects of life and finding this harmony?
I think that it is a process, you know, and that's something that we want to help people do with READ, like find out what that is for themselves. But it starts with making space, you know, and if you don't cultivate that atmosphere, it's not going to happen, you know. And so, like, for me, it's just giving myself permission, because there's always a million things that can be done. But if I realize that, you know, I'll be better suited to do all of those things, if I give myself permission to carve out that space to do whatever it is, you know, I think sometimes I've tried things that were a complete flop. Like, I took this dance class. It was like an adult dance class. I'm not like a sexy dance class, but just like a
little pop one. We've done it.
That's my self-care stuff.
Yeah, and my girlfriend loved it, and I was just like, never again. That was fun. Thank you. Next. Like, and so I think, you know, you just gotta kind of like try things and see what it is for you. I mean, when as somebody that's like been born and raised pretty much on a beach, like when I lived in New York, that was the hardest thing for me about being in the city. I could not access it, no matter what I did, how I tried. People love living in New York. I felt like I was going to shrivel up and die, because I just needed to be like my feet in the sand. I needed to see the sun. I needed to smell it. Whatever it is, everybody's different. You know, Kat's from Colorado. She gets that sensation when she's in the mountains. I think you just have to kind of do it and see what makes you come alive. You know, what gives you that like little serotonin boost.
And I think a lot of it is honestly on learning all the messages that we've taken in over our lifetimes about how certain things should be done or how certain things should look, and just silencing all of those other voices so that we can really listen to ourselves. Because if we really silence all of that other crap and listen to ourselves, the answer is there. So it's really just coming alongside women and helping them unlearn all of those messages and really just giving support and encouragement and space to allow them to really listen to that and to not feel selfish and to not feel self-centered and, you know, allow themselves to understand that putting yourself first is okay. And that's a lot of, I mean, for me, that's, you know, 4 decades of messaging to unpack. So that's not something that happens overnight. So it's something that you have to be pretty intentional about and really prioritize it. And I think it has to be done like anything else with consistency.
I mean, I'm just thinking of this for the first time, but how cool would it be in this industry, even in this room with the four of us, if we all were creating out of a place of really intimately knowing who we were as artists and what made us come alive. I think so much of what we've seen in our industry is like kind of repackaging of the same things that we think are going to sell for whatever reason, you know, what planners want to see, what clients want to see, what magazines want to see, versus if every artist, you know, created from a sense of deeply innately knowing who they are, I think we would see some really incredible stuff, you know, that hasn't been seen because it's hidden under all of the, like she said, years of messaging or fear or scarcity mentality or whatever. I just think it's really exciting to think about what's out there, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I almost want to like throw in a question of what are some of the things you've tried, like you said, the dance class that were just not for you, because I feel like it's just a great reality check of like sometimes you have to try a lot of things that don't work out. Like in college, I was like, you know what? I want to be an artsy person. I signed myself up for a pottery class. Pottery, not for me. Like the wheel shredded my hand. I did not find joy in it. I was like, I think I didn't even go to the last three classes because I was so stressed out. And so just to give our listeners a little reality check, what are some things you tried in name of self-care that just didn't work out?
I don't know. My mind is going a million different places. But one reason Kat and I feel like work so well together is that we're both like to a psychotic level, like morning people. Like we are like our text messages are blowing up at like 5 a.m. But like 8 p.m., like don't talk to me. Don't come near me. I literally don't want to even be alive anymore. So anything like at night that I've tried to do, like mom's night out or I don't know, dinner at some cool restaurant. Like I'm just kind of like, okay, like last night. Oh, my gosh. We tried to go out to this new restaurant and we went early because it's like you can't even get in. And I was like, I'm not going to go home until after bedtime because of that. Like, this is our big night on the town. Literally, we finished dinner at like 5 and we were like, okay, how long till we could go home and go to bed? Oh my
God. We're like falling asleep on the way home in the car.
Like we're trying to like be cool and like go out and be artsy. And honestly, we're just like, how many hours till we can go to sleep?
I mean, and I think honestly, I don't think you have to be good at something either to enjoy it. And
no.
And for me, that's been like as a 3, obviously, that's like
yep,
that's internal, right? Because like my intuition is, well, if I'm not going to be the best at something, what's the point? Yeah. My kids both take violin lessons and I was driving them. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to take violin lessons. I take violin lessons. I'm terrible. I mean, just terrible. Like my fingers don't even like operate that way. The violin's really hard. My kids mock me. They get great enjoyment out of the fact that they're much better at than me. But you know what? It's like, it's interesting because when I'm in that 30-minute lesson, like my brain shuts off and I'm just focused on that. And I think something like music for me, like activates a different part of my brain than anything else that I do. And so even though I'm really bad at it, I still continue to take the lessons. Yes. And I'm not allowed to be part of the recital because my kids said that was too embarrassing.
I'm picturing like, you know, the little kids in band class where every, you know, it's like
awesome. She's standing in the back with her violin.
Like, just like a triangle.
Okay. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a really funny thing to picture.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's so interesting too, because being a fellow 3, whenever I pick up any type of new thing, I'm like, well, I'm going to be the best at this. I'm going to turn this into so much money. And then like, if I burn out in a couple of months, then I'm like, why am I like this? Like I feel like it's really hard. I put it really hard on myself before realizing like I could just have fun with something and it could just be something that I can do sporadically. Like I paint very badly, but I'm painting. Like just getting something new within your brain, I think, is really important. So a good thing to think about for our listeners is, you know, just try out everything, see what sticks.
Yes. I feel like what you said too, unlearning the things society has taught us, I feel like the millennial hustle culture includes that every hobby needs to be a side hustle. And that's just unlearning that of like, not, you don't have to monetize everything. You can do an activity and even be really good at it for fun.
That's so hard. I don't know about that.
Not have to make an Instagram for it, an Etsy shop for it, you know, all of that. And I'm all for financial freedom and the things you have to do to get there. But, you know, we can have hobbies and activities and things that are, let's make a business out of it.
Right. And I mean, even with Reed, like, we have a member on our team that's like, okay, but what's the metric? Like, what's your plan? And we're like, help people.
Help women, help people. Like, that's it.
Like, I don't know. What do they say? Like, your survival story is someone else's, like, roadmap for success or something like that. And it's like, if one person feels like they can keep going in this creative pursuit because of Reed, like, that is a huge success, you know? And so I don't know, maybe it's my trauma speaking, but I just really feel like we're so passionate about this and we want to open up this community to anybody who needs it. And yeah, maybe one day it'll turn into something that we can monetize in a more, you know, hands-on way. But right now, like, we just want to be there. We want to support people. And it's not like we have this endless capacity to do so, but we'll do what we can with what we have. And that's kind of the idea.
And by people, we mainly mean women. Because I think what, you know, we as women, as female creatives, we just have different challenges and different roles than I think men. And obviously, I'm very much generalizing, but part of the decision for that was we really wanted all the women in our community to feel safe being extremely vulnerable. And I don't know about you all, but I don't think most women feel totally comfortable being completely vulnerable in a group of men that they don't know that well. So that was kind of part of the reason for that decision. But also, I think as we just have different challenges and different experiences in the world and different messaging that we've been given, you know, over our lifetimes that we have to unpack. Men have their own issues, and it's not to minimize or anything. They're just different. So we're just both really, really passionate about helping other women and supporting other women creatives specifically.
Love that. So what's next for Reed then? What's on the horizon?
Right now, we're really just looking to build, you know, establish Reed as a community and to welcome, you know, people in. I think it would be really cool if one day we could do like retreat together, or we could have, you know, a little roadmap that we can offer for people to download, you know, tools for creative sustainability. I mean, there's all kinds of things we could do with it, but at this point, with our current lifestyles, we just are looking to create that space and, you know, see what the need is. What we've been doing a lot on our Instagram is just asking questions, you know, what does success feel like? Do you feel like you're a master of your craft? Things that kind of help people think along the lines of what we want, you know, to do. And we're going to kind of just see where it goes.
We're trying to be really open to where Reed can kind of go so that it can really fit the need of the people that decide to join us.
Going with that river of seeing how things go. I love it. So, well, thank you so much, you two, talking with us all about balance and the Reed community. We would love to go into a time of fast facts for our listeners to get to know you both a little bit better.
Sounds fun.
All right. So we're going to fire questions at you. Let's have Jess answer first. And then Kat, just our listeners know who's chatting. So first up, what do you shoot with?
I have a love-hate relationship with my Fuji GFX. I have 100S and it does well with portraits. But every time I try to do anything else with it, I'm like, I remember I hate this thing. I know not everybody had that experience. So I don't know. I keep like checking my firmware, but I also have Canon bodies and lenses. And, you know, I was a contacts shooter for a decade. So I still have that girl, but I don't really use it much anymore. But Kat and I also both started shooting film around the same time. And, you know, that was a hard habit to break, but I think we're finally there.
I can't break it.
Ashley shooting more film than ever. I'm like, get a girl.
Do you have a money tree?
I do. Maybe Kat can plant me one in her garden.
I'm going to plant one for myself first. I mean, I primarily shoot an R5 on the wedding day, but for personal stuff, I still love my Hasselblad 500cm. That's like my soul camera, and I love that thing.
Love it. What is your favorite like post-wedding snack after working a wedding day?
I don't usually eat after a wedding day. We're so different on like our eating habits on a wedding day. I don't know if it's like fear of not getting fed, but I like eat so much like in terms of like snacks and protein before and during the wedding that after the wedding I'm just like I'm done, good night. But I always have to drive Kat
Taco Bell.
We usually end up with fries and a milkshake, so don't worry.
Yeah. And burrito.
Where do you get fries that late at night?
McDonald's
are in and out for us.
Yeah. A lot of California weddings end at 10 because of noise ordinances, so it's not that late.
Yeah, that doesn't happen in Miami.
That sounds amazing.
What do you, either of you, or maybe it's different, have like pump up music to get you in the creative headspace on the way to a wedding? A lot of people answer silence too, so don't worry. That's your answer.
I do prefer silence, but also because our taste in music are a little bit different. I would listen to Taylor Swift like without ceasing, and Kat would probably
90s hip hop.
Yeah. Totally different. So you're like, silence it is.
Silence. We both like silence.
I feel like there's got to be some like TikToker that could make you a mashup. You know, like,
Taylor is so universal and versatile.
Like Taylor mixed with 90s hip hop. And you could
like a Taylor Biggie mashup.
Exactly. So there's so many DJs out there that are talented now.
What is your favorite thing to do outside of the industry?
Well, Kat would be gardening.
Gardening.
Yep.
Traveling. I love traveling.
Yeah, I like traveling too, but the shine is kind of worn off because of the logistics and getting to a point where I can travel. But I also really love thrift store shopping. That's like my guilty pleasure because we just have really good ones around here, and I get so excited. It's like an addiction. It's like a little thing. It is an addiction.
You know? Yeah, I get so much serotonin when it's like finding that treasure. I'm like, yeah.
Like you could just cry. It's such a rush.
See, and I have no desire to ever step into it. Like if I find a piece of clothing, I need it to be available in like 17 sizes.
What does it fit? That's me. I prefer the stores where there's like 6 pieces of clothing in there and they tell me what to buy and I can just go in and there's not like an overwhelming visual of a bunch of stuff and I can get in. Chaos. And get it.
All right. What is the best education you've learned from over the years?
I mean, I feel like right now I would have to say The Artist Way by Julia Cameron. Have you guys read that book? I mean, I feel like that is the heart behind Reed, like in a nutshell, you know? So that would be what I would point to currently.
The book that I always come back to is Unfuck Yourself. And I can't remember the name of the author. He's Scottish. I highly recommend you listen to it on Audible. But the premise of the book is basically people always say they want these things in their life, but then the choices and the actions that they take don't match the things that they say that they want. So you got to really dig deep and figure out, well, do I actually want this thing, or am I just listening to all these outside voices telling me I should want this thing? And if you then decide that you want this thing, well, then make the choices that actually, you know, go in that direction. So that book really, really spoke to me, and I recommend it to everybody.
Perfect.
Yeah, it is good. I have listened to the Audible too.
What is one daring leap you've taken in your business or life?
For me, it would be merging my business, I think. But I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, I would say the same. Yeah, definitely joining our businesses. And I am thrilled with this decision and happy that we both jumped because it's amazing. I feel great about our business.
What is one thing you feel like the other person is great at in the business?
Oh, gosh. We're very, it's interesting because like I've said before, like we're both really similar, but we're both really different. But I think one of the things that I value the most is that for my entire career, I always wanted to like bring on associates or have other people because it was so hard on me to just be me. But I never felt like I could trust like my clients. I'm very protective over their experience. And I never felt like I could trust anybody else with that. But yet, like with Kat, it was never a question. Like she's just completely natural with relating to people and helping them to feel comfortable and helping them to feel seen. And I know I can throw her into any group of people anywhere in any environment and not have to think twice about it, you know, and that is really comforting, you know, for something that I feel like I've been so protective of for so long, you know. She's also a lot better with like the bookkeeping accounting side of things, and she will tear up a dance floor at a reception and get the most amazing, you know, candids where, like I said, I'm ready to just call it a night after that, the dances, you know. So those are all things I would think she's really good at.
Yeah, we can second that. When we met Kat, we were like, we love her. She's amazing. Like right away, we're like, that's it. And so I feel like that'd be so great on the wedding day. Just like Kat's energy.
Right.
Aww.
And her, like her ability to like notice someone else's energy and sort of match it. That's the three, you know, and know that it's going to help their experience be such a positive one.
Well, and on the flip side, Jess is just like has this like calming, peaceful energy on a wedding day.
Only outwardly.
That
I feel that.
Really makes clients feel safe, you know, with her. And she's also really, really intentional and really good at noticing like really small, minute details. Like she's amazing at hands, especially. Like the hands are one of the first things that I'd notice in any photo. And if you go back and look at her work, her hands are just, they tell a story in every photo. It's so amazing. And then on the business side, well, I don't even have to post on Instagram anymore. Jess does all of our social media. Go take a look at our feed. It's perfection. And she's so good at it. So I love not having to do that part of the business.
You know, so where can our listeners find you? Website, Instagram?
We have a lot of Instagrams between the two of us, but we have Your Read Co. on Instagram, where we've just posted some like reels and questions and things like that. We have a community on Facebook, but the best thing to do would just be to go to yourread.co. Is that it? Mm-hmm. Because everything is linked there. And that way you can join the community, you can download our guide, you can find us. We are on TikTok, but it's kind of like the stepchild because we're too old. Well, I'm too old. So that I think Instagram or the website or Facebook would be the best bet.
And by we are on TikTok, she means her because I don't even have the app on my phone.
We're really trying, but I just can't with TikTok.
I feel that. So are there any other announcements coming out of Read that you want our listeners to know about?
No, I mean, we don't have anything, you know, time sensitive, but we just want people to know that we're here and we get it and we see you and we are you. And that's why this is so important to us.
We do have a free download on our website, on the Your Read website, just a little download about how to reclaim your creativity. So if people want to go and check that out, it's right on the Your Read website.
Perfect. We'll definitely link that for our listeners to get to. But in closing, we want to ask you, what is one thing you want to dare our listeners to do after listening to your episode?
I mean, for me, it would just say like, to be curious about what the artist within is asking you for. What does it need? How can you nurture that little voice that we all have, you know?
I think for me, it would be to really get brave about not listening to all those other voices and really allow your own personal, like, individual creativity, all the weird stuff, the things that really get you excited that you might be like, well, is this too much for Instagram, or is this going to work, or is this too different for the industry? You know, does this fit? Are the planners going to like this? All those things. Just set those things aside and really allow yourself to get excited about creativity on your own terms.
I love that. Well, thank you, Jess and Kat, for joining us on Dare to Develop today. We appreciate it. Jess and Kat offered a lot of great perspective on redefining what balance and what success means for you in different seasons of life. I know as a toddler parent, that has ebbed and flowed for me very much in this season, and it is still really easy to get caught up in the narratives and, like, the lies we've been told from society about how we need to always hustle, always have a certain type of success, and not necessarily prioritize us first.
Yeah. And I think I love their idea of it being more of a harmony, and for them being in the industry for so long, just having this new community read that allows women who maybe are in this season of burnout to kind of find a community and for others and just to help others. And I think we really need that.
Yes. So we hope you take both of their dares and just really take a look at Read. I know we will definitely be joining the Read community as well, because it's something we both feel we need at these seasons of our lives. And we hope to see our Dare to Develop listeners there as well.
And catch us next time on Dare to Develop.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Dare to Develop.
We'd love for you to subscribe and leave us a review if you love today's episode.
Don't forget to check out the show notes at daretodeveloppodcast.com and follow along on IG at daretodevelop.
Catch us next week for more fun as we hear from creatives who have dared greatly in their businesses and develop community along the way.